Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and today we are discussing who will win the four major championships next year, who we think is going to be a breakout star. No, we're obviously talking about Jon Rahm joining LIV. Joining me to break it all down, Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick, good day.
Good day. Good day. The big winner out of all of this, I think, has to be the USGA and the RNA. Following the rollback news, for them to kind of just sneak in under the rug. Kudos to them. Maybe Yasser gets that Augusta National membership. Maybe that's the next domino to fall. Who knows? But good day to you guys.
Kyle Porter is here. KP, if you have anything you want swept under the rug, if you have any news dump items, now would be the time. They will go completely unnoticed.
I just want to see Patrick's Grant Thornton betting card. I thought that's why we were congregating today.
You know, I had to sprinkle a little bit on Denny and Megan Kang. But as a Deloitte man myself, I couldn't donate too much money to a competitor in the audit space.
It's incredible. I could listen to Patrick get steep on the Grant Thornton invitation. Is it an invitational? Open? What is it?
I believe so. Did you guys hear about McKinsey, though? That news? They Hughes? Cut their partner? No, McKinsey, the consulting firm.
No.
They really cut their partner class this year. Shame.
Oh, they had to. They probably LIV didn't have them doing due diligence, so they didn't have enough money.
There you go. I mean, it affects everyone.
Totally.
Trickle down economics. While we're here, let's talk about Jon Rahm going to LIV. So last night on Fox News, Jon Rahm officially announced that he is joining LIV Golf. He would say, quote, "I've officially joined LIV Golf. It's not an easy decision because I've had a really successful career and I've been really happy, but there's a lot of things that LIV Golf has to offer that were very, very enticing, starting with team golf. Being part of a team is something that's been really big for me throughout my career. I was part of the Spanish national team from the age of 14 until I graduated college. I was part of the Arizona State golf team. And as a pro, you don't have that chance very often. It's something that is very fun to play for something more than just yourself." KP, that was essentially Jon Rahm's opening statement. How do you do?
I mean, it with all these guys, they go and they say all this stuff and you're like, okay, man, whatever. But with him, I mean, he's so... Like, was there anybody that's been, maybe Rory, I guess, that's been more vocal against all of that, right? Like, so the money was one thing. He talked about, obviously, the famous clip from the U.S. Open at Brookline, $400 million wouldn't change my life. And he at least, like, hinted at, well, the number got big enough, whatever. So he at least kind of, like, backtracked on that. With this, he's like, the format's stupid. I hate it, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, it's like the greatest thing in the world. Like, what are, you know, I just like, why, like, don't use that as a reason when you so obviously don't believe it.
Well, the other thing is, even if he has changed his mind, Patrick, on the format or the money became too much, it is Jon Rahm has been, even if he hasn't been for or against certain things, he's always very transparent, very thoughtful, very interesting. One of the few guys on the PGA Tour that offers that. And immediately, as soon as these guys sign live contracts, it is bullet point, talking list, grow the game. I'm excited for team golf. Remember when I was 14 and I was playing on the Spanish national team, something I've never, ever mentioned before in my entire life. Now I'm excited about that again. It's just, these guys get, they essentially get neutered. And I guess the price of that is $500 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big John Rahm fan as a person, just the way he's kind of handled it leading into this, you know, level-headed responses whenever he got peppered with questions. I thought he was fantastic, and I was surprised he went full heel turn. I really was. I, you know, would have expected something more along the lines of Harold Varner, you know, him coming out saying, look, guys, I'm doing this for the money. It's going to set up my family for future generations. I have a charity.
He kind of did.
Yeah, but then you add in the talking points as well that, I mean, I understand HV3's contract was only $50 million and Rahm's is probably 10x that. So for 10x, yeah, you're gonna read the talking points and, you know, be okay with it, because I think your mind is probably elsewhere.
Let's get into some of those talking points. There's a lot of quotes here. So on the growth of the game, John Rahm would say, quote, and simply, the growth that LIV Golf has brought into the game of golf, it's something fresh, it's something new, it's something with a ton of potential and opportunity, it's something I'm really excited about. He would go on to say something like, you know, I can get in front of more eyeballs this way, which, you know, KP is objectively false. Now, I think that some people on Twitter or elsewhere would say, oh, well, he sees the vision, the long-term vision of this, but growing the game has been a A1 talking point from day one. I'm not necessarily sure there's tangible evidence of that, but it seems to be the most likely talking point you get from guys who go to live.
Anecdotally, Rick, are we growing or shrinking the game right now? Right? Like that's sort of my big picture thing with all this is like, yo, we're not, I know that that's just a talking point or whatever, but we're not nothing like you, we are, Andy Johnson said it like this, like golf, professional golf is eating itself. Like we are shrinking the game. Like people are like, and this is anecdotal. There's no like data or surveys to back this up, but like people are less interested in following professional golf outside of the majors than they were 6 months ago. Of course they are. Like if the NFL split in two, you'd be like, well, wake me up when and it's less so, right? Like it's all proportional, but like wake me up whenever the AFL and the NFL teams are in the playoffs together, right? Like that's how we view the major championships. And that is just nonsense. Now, the pass that I will give John Rahm, and I think this is true of like the Aussie guys as well, is, hey, PGA Tour, you've done a crappy job of taking the game global. Now, that's a business decision. That's a very difficult thing to do, to have a far-flung business rather than a concentrated one. And so if John Rahm believes that this will bring in more fans in Spain, like you get a pass on that one thing, right? But broadly speaking, I don't like this, and we'll get to more of this as we get into some of the effects on the PGA Tour, but this diminishes everything. It doesn't grow anything. Like people aren't, and I agree, a bunch of people have said this, like, And I've actually kind of come to believe, maybe we talked about this, Rick, but like Tiger's the only one that matters, right? Like Rory doesn't matter. JT, Spieth, Rahm, none of these guys matter, you know? And so as long as it's separated, as long as there's two leagues, you're not gaining on either. At best, you're like splitting this one thing in two at best and keeping it the same just in two different places. Yeah. And that's like the best case scenario. And I don't even think that's what's happening. I think people are like, whatever, like, wake me up on, like, get back to me on April 1st and tell me when the Masters is.
Yeah, I keep going back to a couple of things. One, that 2020 golf was given a gift it hadn't seen before, right? An influx of new viewers, of new players, of interest. We got a Netflix doc out of it. The game had really never been so strong. And since then, repeated shots to the foot, whether it's rollback, whether it is splitting your stars into two different leagues, it has just been like a disaster and no end in sight. The other thing that I worry about, Patrick, and I'll ask you a question. Do you know who the current boxing heavyweight champion of the world is?
Ricky Hatton.
That is incorrect. KP, do you know who the current heavyweight champion boxer is?
I don't know that I can name a boxer, so no. Vladimir something.
Okay, not a horrible. Putin. Not Vladimir Putin. Vladimir
Guerrero.
Horrible guess. Josh in the chat knows. So Tyson Fury. Okay, Tyson Fury is 34-0-1. The problem is he is only the WBC heavyweight champion because Alexander Usyk is the WBA champ, the IBF champ, the WBO champ, but split in the WBA, he's only the super champ because Mamad Char is the regular champ. My point being that the worst case scenario for golf is to become boxing, in which you have all of these entities that think they are the entity, in which they're playing by maybe different rules, regulations, you're not competing against one another. And the state of boxing in America has never been so bad, right? I mean, it used to be the heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali, right? George Foreman. Think about these guys. And it has just suffered so much. And I hope, Patrick, that golf is not on the path of boxing.
I'm not sure that it is yet, but I will say it is scary close to the path of tennis, yeah, where there are so many tournaments out there. You don't really know who's playing where or at what time on what circuit. And all you care about is Wimbledon, the French Open, the Aussie, and the US Open. That's all that matters. And honestly, that's where we're at right now. Because like Kyle said, we have two products that are probably C's, C plus, B minuses. And we could just come together, put this, you know, our differences aside and have an A plus product where you have something like, you know, LIV Golf be the international circuit, harmonize schedules, you know, lay down your guns and have people have flexibility in between tours. And you have the PGA Tour in the United States. And I don't know if they'll ever come to that. Hopefully they will. But I mean, having your best players not on the same playing field, on the same golf courses, at the same tournaments, it's brutal for the sport. And it's exhausting to follow for the average fan. And we've talked about the average fan a lot, how they've just been boned in all of this. And they continue to get boned because, you know, they're not going to want to watch two different golf tournaments with, you know, Rahm and Koepka and DJ on one week and Rory, Spieth and JT on another, right? I mean, they're too golfed out at that point. They don't want to track two different golf tournaments. I mean, the average fan doesn't. They don't have that much time in their day. And so I think, honestly, we're closer to tennis than we ever have been.
Yeah. Two things. One, Rick, this is the first time I think over the last 2 years where I think about, I was thinking about this all night. I had a thing last night and I was just staring at my phone the whole time. I was at a concert with my wife and friends, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, this big Spaniard's in a Letterman jacket. I don't know what to tell you," you know? And I thought about this all night. And every time I think about Kapalua, which is like, Kapalua is so fun, right? It's such a, I've grown to really love that event. It's such a marker for me, and especially with the new schedule where it's like the start of the PGA Tour season and all this stuff. And I am not looking forward to Kapalua, because I think before I could talk myself into, well, whatever, Reed kind of stinks and DJ's getting older and it would be nice to have Cam. He was kind of sick, but okay. And now it's like, man, we don't even have the best guy in the world here. And also the defending champion. And it just, to me, Kapalua, like that's the first event that's upcoming. It's so diminished. Like it just is. Like, I don't know how else to say that. Like it is, it doesn't feel big time. And maybe I'll feel differently once it gets here in a month or whatever. But I think the other thing is, Patrick, we've seen this before, right? Like this was 30, 40 years ago where the European tour was kind of banging, had all the riz, and you had the European tour and the PGA tour, right? You had split tours and European guys didn't come over here. Seve played over there. Faldo played over there. All these guys throughout the 70s and 80s and Faldo, they started to come over here at the end of that. But you know what the difference was, Patrick? You can't play for $25 million purses. So either you can do your split tours, do it, whatever. But guess what, Patrick Cantlay? You're going to be playing for $6 million and not 30, right? And we've gotten into this like just insane game of greed. And you can blame whoever, but it started with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And there's no, like, what is the end to that? Like, do your separate tours, do your own thing, don't merge, whatever, but you're going to be playing for $5 million. And if you want to do that, fine. I'm going to keep paying attention. Some people will keep paying attention and the majors will still be a big deal, but that's going to be what the deal is.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people blame Jay Monahan, which is fair. He's done an ineffective job, but you got to blame the players too. Because what they've done in kind of this bubble that we're in currently, it's because of them. It's because they think they're worth so much under the sun because PIF came in and gave them a market rate that's just Looney Tunes. And they believe that's now the new market when it's not. And we're going to eventually revert back, like you said, I mean, maybe not $5 million purses, but to the norm, you know?
But maybe.
Yeah. And so it's only a matter of time. I mean, 5, 10, 15 years, these guys coming out of college, these guys, you know, up and coming stars. It's so bizarre where, you know, each and every year, it seems like there are new money records being broken. And that just won't be the case.
This is the big problem also that happens in boxing as well, is this is clearly a bubble, like so obviously a bubble, you know, the revenue in professional golf in a year is probably maybe $2 billion across everything. I mean, the PGA Tour is 1.1. What is, you know, the Masters and the Majors and the Ryder Cup is $2 billion a fair?
Are you saying like TV money, gate sale, concession, like money generated?
Yeah.
Okay.
We know the tour does about 1.1, right?
I thought the tour was like 1.5.
Okay, so if the tour is 1.5, then you throw in Ryder Cups, President's Cups, European Tour, Live, whatever else, major championships. I mean, are we at 2.5?
I think it's fair to say that we're between 2 and 2.5.
Okay. Then you have the PIF basically just paying $2 billion in, whether it's player contracts, the cost to run these events. You cannot have a world in which your contracts are that close to the revenue of your sport, of your entire sport. That doesn't even get down to the expenses for these things and get to the bottom line. This is why in boxing, Floyd Mayweather gets a percentage of pay-per-view revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. That's an insane thing to do because that's a bubble. And it says, okay, well now Floyd Mayweather is going to make $300 million and everybody else is going to make nothing off of this. It's just, it's so unsustainable from even a financial side of things. Like I don't know. And the spending, I don't know if it's going to slow down. I don't know how, but this, it doesn't continue to work like this.
Why do you say that the Floyd Mayweather thing is a bubble because it's not a sustainable system? Is that what you mean by that?
not sustainable for the sport. It's sustainable for Floyd Mayweather. That's great for him, right? If he can get that, that's great. But there's difference between Floyd Mayweather and the hundreds or thousands of other boxers, the other entities that are associated with the sport of boxing. It would be like Jon Rahm making $1 billion a year and 1,000 other guys making 40K a year or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? It is not sustainable for the health of the sport.
Yeah. Well, golf had its Floyd Mayweather, right?
Yeah, Tiger. but that also did increase things across for everybody.
Yeah, but my point is, we've talked about this, but what we're entering into now is this post-Tiger era where you have this vacuum of ripping Tiger out of the equation. We haven't even realized that part of it yet. Right. Like that was not necessarily, it was maybe a little bit baked into this latest TV contract negotiation. But you get to 2030, 2031 when Tiger's 54 years old. I mean, maybe there's another Tiger, but probably not. Right. And so you combine that with the PIF acting so irrationally, and I my thing with this, Rick, it's like who's going to be the adult? Who's going to be the adult in the room to tell everybody and to get everybody on the same page and say, this is not going to work, guys. Like this is gonna pop, and it's not going to be good for the next 15 or 20 years. There hasn't been that adult, and you can give Monahan a pass on some stuff, but I don't know if he's that adult, right? Who is it? Patrick Cantlay's leading the PG. Patrick Cantlay's negotiating with private equity for what are we doing? What are you like the eighth best player in the world is trying to negotiate deals with private equity firms for the future of golf? What the hell is that?
Himself a hat deal for $1 million, yet he is trying to negotiate a multi-billion-dollar private equity deal for the future of professional golf. I thought that so you know how Mark Cuban it was a couple weeks ago on Monday he announced he wasn't coming back to Shark Tank. On Tuesday he sold his like majority stake in the Mavericks, and everybody's like, he's gonna run for president, and I'm like, he's gonna save golf. Like he's gonna be the guy. Like clear out the schedule, get the funds. Let's go, Mark. We need you, buddy.
I like the conspiracy theory of, you know, potentially something happening between Cantlay and Goldman Sachs in regard to investing into the Enterprise Starship. I think there could be something there as well, Rick. And look, I see him taking some heat for blaming the players, and I'm not blaming them for taking money. I kind of blame them a little bit for their thinking, because there's some tweet out there where it's like you have these bottom tier players who believe in their hearts of hearts that they should be paid like the top tier players. And then you have the top tier players who believe they should be played like Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes, but they don't play in the NFL. That's the difference. And I know the market reset with PIF and all this money flowing in, and it's just, you know, pennies to them, pretty much what they're throwing at Rahm and the rest of these guys. But you would think, you know, whether it's through an agreement or whatever down the line, that, you know, common sense prevails.
Well, I think part of it, Patrick, is you had Phil running around like the town crier saying, oh, the PGA Tour is withholding all this money. And whether you believed that or not, the PIF made it seem as if it was true, right? To where the PIF is like, oh, here's all the money that the PGA Tour should have been paying you. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like the PGA Tour was paying out at a percentage of revenue pretty tantamount to other leagues, right? The NBA pays 51%, the NFL pays whatever, 49%, 52%. PGA Tour was right around that number. Now, the thing you could argue is like, hey, go generate more revenue, and so we get a bigger percentage of it. I will listen to that argument, but I think everybody implicitly like believed the Phil thing because he had PIF money to make it seem as if it was true. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically spoken into existence, at least in the short term. We'll see what happens in the long term. We're going to continue this conversation. There's a question in the chat I want to get to. We've got to talk about what comes next. There's still a negotiation, seemingly, for the framework to become a permanent deal. We'll talk about that. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
And we're back. We have a lot of other stuff to talk about. I don't want to linger too long on the financial stuff, but there is a comment here from Jason Evan. Josh, it would be at 10:19 a.m. Eastern time. It says, why are we acting like the Premier League, Bundesliga, MLS, Spain, Italy, etc. don't exist and aren't all elite? Why the hyperbole that there could only be one league for golf? And I think this is a very good comment here. And I'm not as familiar, Patrick, with the state of soccer and how it is spread out over the course of the world. But I imagine, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the Premier League is kind of its own entity with a budget, revenue, sponsors, its own financial ecosystem. Bundesliga, its own financial sustainable ecosystem. MLS, obviously, I'm assuming those contracts are much less, but based on its own economic ecosystem, right? I mean, they are all playing within their own, I'm assuming, budgets, which is not necessarily happening in golf right now.
Yeah, and I think also, it's a pretty good point. But I mean, you have those teams that are in the city, you know, generating game sale tickets, revenue, you know, every single week, pretty much. They play every week and they have diehard fans, guys who have been in that city for their entire lives, who have been Man U fans forever. And I think with golf, players come and go, but teams are always going to be there. They're always going to have their fans, even if they suck, even if they're good. And I think it's kind of just apples to oranges, just because it's a team thing versus individual sport, even though I understand LIV Golf has teams.
Two things on that. One, the pool of people that you're drawing from is 10x, 20x, 30x. I mean, it's so much bigger. And two, like, there doesn't have to be one league, but what I'm saying is, like, if there are multiple leagues that, we already had multiple leagues, right? We already had the European Tour, the Asian Tour. And that's what I just got done saying is, like, we can have all that, but we can't have it at the level that we're experiencing it right now, which is $20 million, $25 million purses. And that's where it's like, okay, I don't necessarily think that's what's best for the sport. But it would be like, I think it would be more like if you split the Premier League into two leagues, right? And said, like, well, I know we had like all this history and all these rivalries and all this stuff, but we're going to have these guys go play over here, these teams go play over here, and these teams go play over here. People would be like, screw that. I'll just watch the Champions League, which is the majors, right? I'll just watch when they all get to get, like, all the best teams get to. This is not a perfect analogy, but that's what I think it's more like. And again, we can have all those leagues. That's fine. That's bad for golf, I think. Like, it's bad for the viewer. Now, I will say it's bad for me, the viewer, the fan. It might be good for the Australian fan. And I do want to acknowledge that, because I think that's something that's gotten a little bit lost, is like, there's this myopic American point of view that a lot of us have been pushing. And it's like, yo, I don't get any golf in Australia. I don't get any golf in Belgium. I don't get any golf in wherever. And I think that's worthy of consideration. I think that's worthy of acknowledging. But I think broadly, you got to bring the purses down if that's the case, which is fine, but somebody's got to do that. And I don't know, like selfishly, it's not really what I would like to see.
Well, the John Rahm domino falls, Patrick. This will obviously create more dominoes that fall. There were reports that joining John Rahm's new team could be Tony Finau, could be Tyrrell Hatton. We still have a negotiation in place with a deadline about 23, 24 days away. What happens next?
I thought it was kind of telling that Rahm said last night that he hopes to keep his status on the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, where, I mean, is there a scenario where John Rahm is there at Kapalua? Maybe.
I thought about that.
Maybe. There could be. And so I think, you know, this is down the line. It's not going to happen the next year, probably the next year or two, but I think the two leagues need to come together and kind of harmonize their schedule for all the criticism there has been about LIV Golf. Like Kyle said, what I believe one of the things that they've done great is leverage the international market with their event in Adelaide, the event of the year, some are saying. You see it at Valderrama. They had a great event as well. Mayakoba was a strong showing, and they've struggled, and I think even they would admit it, to kind of get a foothold in the U.S. And so the opportunities right there for, look, drop the suspensions, let people flow wherever they want, and then just have those like mandatory six non-major events. So 10 times a year, 11 times a year, we do get the best players in the world all together. You know, let them go back and forth and say, okay, look, Rory, you're going to have to play internationally 3 times a year. You're going to have to go to Australia, whether you like it or not. You know, Patrick Cantlay, you're the mastermind behind this. You're going to do. And on the flip, you can bring, I know,
but who's going to tell Patrick Cantlay that? Patrick Cantlay thinks he's telling other people what to do. That's sort of my point, is who's the adult?
Yeah. Well, who knows? But I think that's what needs to happen, is for them to harmonize the tours, cease fire, let flow in between tours, and say, okay, we're going to have these 10 events between the majors and, you know, team events, whatever it may be, and go from there.
So here's the quote. John Rahm, quote, "I do want to maintain my PGA Tour and DP World Tour status. I will not give that up. Hopefully with the freedom Live gives me, I can play both those tours. There are certain PGA Tour events I want to play as long as my schedule allows. If possible, I want to make that happen." KP, if you are Jay Monahan, if you are Patrick Cantlay, or whoever the hell is in charge right now in these meetings, what's the solution? What's your proposal? How does the game of golf figure itself out right now?
Well, like, doesn't this force the tour to, like, is there another option besides merging with Liv, or with the public investment fund?
No,
you get American money for a couple of years, and then you're just back where you started.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, even if you get an investment from one of these other entities, what is that? It's kind of over, right?
You still, even if, let's say Fenway, who I know they're out, but like, even if you get private equity,
I think Fenway's still in.
Okay, Fenway's still in. Even if you get private equity money, I won't even name it, but you get private equity money, it's never going to outspend the PIF. You're still at an arms race, and you are still without your stars, or at least half of them. And you have lost your moral high ground of keeping golfers on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Which is just, we can talk about Jay Monahan in a couple of minutes. But the thing, KP, you know, whether it was a great negotiating tool to sign John Rahm right now, the PGA Tour has very, very little leverage left in this whole thing. They do have leverage. They do have a network of existing sponsors and partners. Maybe, you know, FedEx would want to buy a team. There are things that the PGA Tour has to offer. They're getting smaller by the minute. The idea of maybe it's LIV is the team side of things, the PGA Tour is the individual side of things, or I like what kind of where Patrick was going with it is, hey, the LIV events and the signature events. That's like a new tour, so to speak. Maybe there's 8 LIV events, 8 signature events, 4 major championships. The big boys play all of those and we'll figure out the rest of it later, right? PGA Tour Elite or World Golf Plus or whatever you want to call it, NUCO.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. Like the private equity money, you could outspend the PIF for like a year.
The other thing is the private equity money
wants a return.
Yes, comes with strings. The PIF, PIF comes with strings as well, right? You've got to say nice things. You've got to go through the talking points, all that stuff. But do you think that private equity is going to look at these tours underneath the PGA Tour that are just losing money hand over fist, that they are going to look at golfer 75 to 275 favorably? You're kidding yourself.
Well, and that's what if you get private equity money, you don't necessarily get anything because you're not going to get that money with the rubber stamp of like, oh, we can just like hand it out to these guys to keep them here. And so you're getting the money, but do you even get to spend it on what the PIF is going to spend it on, which is more players? I don't think you do. And you had this report on Sports Illustrated by Michael Rosenberg, who's great reporter, good writer, good dude. He's fantastic. And, the PIF apparently put $1 billion on the table. The PIF throws around $1 billion. Like I buy coffees, by the way, which is absurd and frequently. They put $1 billion on the table for like making guys whole, not for investment into the PGA Tour, but just for like, hey, sorry about what happened.
Yeah. A $1 billion equalization pool for guys who stayed on the PGA Tour to make them feel good for their
feelings. Who voted on that?
Who voted against that?
That's what I'm saying.
Well, what happened to it is what I'm saying. Like, where did it go? Did that get taken off the table? Did like what? And this gets back to my earlier point of like, who's the adult that's like, yo, this isn't great. It is what it is. Let's make it work. And you're like, take the $1 billion and then take the $2 billion of investment. I guess I'm a little bit confused still, Patrick, on, well, I've got two things. One, I want to throw this over to you. And then I've got something for Rick. I'm confused a little bit about what Yasser and the Public Investment Fund wants. Like what do you believe at this point in the game that's been going on for 2 years now? What do they want? Does Yasser want LIV to succeed, or does he want? It seems like he really wants to merge. That might not be true, but based on the pool of money, based on there was a report in the Wall Street Journal right around June 6th where it said that he agreed to stop litigating, even if they didn't. What was that report, Rick? Yeah, he agreed to remove the lawsuit even if they didn't merge.
Correct. I think this is as well. Like they spoke to a couple of different merger and acquisition lawyers who were like, that's an insane thing to do, right? You only ever drop litigation under a condition that a merge does happen. And to do it with basically no strings attached, dropping the litigation, whether we get this deal done or not, is very uncommon in the M&A world.
So, I don't know. What do you think the PIF wants? What does Yasser want, Patrick?
I think he was willing to merge early, around June 6th, and then Jay Monahan thought it was a friends and family affair, It's like, oh, let's bring Fenway Group in. Let's bring the Friends of Golf in as well. And I think the Rahm signing can be seen as him kind of thinking, like, are we about to get blocked out of this? What the hell, Jay? This is my play to, you know, make sure I'm still the center of attention in the negotiations. And look, I think reports of Yasser really loving LIV Golf and the team aspect of it are real. And I think, you know, potentially that's not a concession the PGA Tour was willing to make. But there are just so many egos in that room that they can't, on the PGA Tour side, that they can't seem to put aside the fact that they were offered, reportedly, based on that SI article, $1 billion to make, to be whole, $2 billion infused in capital.
Yeah.
And they said no to that. Based on what, they could have given the PIF 49% of that thing.
But did they say no? That's my question. I don't, there wasn't like a conclusion to that sort of anecdote. It just kind of like evaporated.
Said it was there. But, so, you know, maybe it's still on the table for all we know. But the fact that it hasn't come to a decision yet, I think is pretty telling.
And it was with the PGA Tour commissioner, whoever that might be, essentially being in charge, right? Like with the PGA Tour still having control. To answer that, KP, I think there's a lot of good outcomes for Yasser, right? If LIV becomes the only golf tour or the main golf tour in the world, great. They have power. They have control over the sport. If they do this merger, they have a ton of power and a ton of influence in the sport. I also think, and this was from Jon Rahm on Fox News. He was asked about Saudi investment in other sports, and Rahm said, quote, when Ronaldo, Neymar, Benzema went, those are big enough names to think, why not me? Clearly, they're trying to create a positive impact in sports. I'm happy that in a small way, I can help with that, end quote. If you Googled sports washing, that quote probably appears. So Yasser's got a couple of very good outcomes for him. Spend a ton of money, sports wash, control golf via LIV, control golf via NewCo. I'm not sure if he has a preference. Brett in the chat says maybe he just wants to play Augusta National, spend $3 billion and play Augusta National once. Maybe that's the end game for him. But I think there's a lot of very good outcomes for him.
Yeah, I would be fascinated if you got Yasser on the First Cut podcast, gave him truth serum. That'd be sick if we got him on the First Cut podcast and asked him, hey, do you want to merge or do you want LIV to basically take over the PGA Tour, or not take over, but like, do you want the PGA Tour to go away and LIV to be the only thing that exists? And maybe he doesn't care. Maybe those are like similar out. Maybe like those are like the same to him or similar outcomes. I think one interesting thing, Rick, that I noticed on Thursday night, I went back and rewatched the which, by the way, how dystopian is Rahm in a Letterman jacket on Fox News with Brett Baer, and they're speaking in like hushed tones, and you're like, what are we? What is this? Like, what are? How did we? Not. I mean, I understand like why he was doing it, but how did we? What series of events led to this? Right here.
I really wish this happened one day earlier, so we'd have January 6th, June 6th, and December 6th all on the clip for us.
But the thing I was thinking about, well, two things. One, I think that Rahm, you heard him talking about being a pioneer. I think, and I've said this before, I've written this, people think it's stupid, but I believe it. I think he cares about the money, but I think he cares about feeling like he's like the guy. And I think he was always felt like he was in Tiger, JT, Spieth, Rory's shadow at the PGA Tour. I tweeted out the clip from the Ryder Cup of Rory getting 11 questions before he got one. And is that a dumb reason to blow up professional golf? Absolutely. Do I think it plays into his decision? I do. And he talked about it. He said it. He's like, I want to be a pioneer. I have ambition, all these different things. But the real thing, Rick, is you floated this. I think it was on Tuesday this week. Is this and this is giving Rahm way too much credit. It would be giving anybody way too much credit. is this a Trojan horse from the PGA Tour side to the public investment fund? Or not even from the PGA Tour side, but from like the adults being like maybe Rom, Rory, and some other guys of like, if Rom goes, the tour can't lay all these guys. They have to do the deal. They have to. That's a compelling Trojan horse, right?
Yes. And we were kind of chatting about it a little bit. Timing of is so interesting. And I know that when the PGA Tour and PIF, when they, you know, dropped the lawsuits, they also dropped the idea that we're not gonna like grab players from one another, right? But the timing of this, a few weeks out from the deadline, does that either say that John Rahm doesn't think a deal is going to get done, John Rahm doesn't care if a deal is going to get done, or that John Rahm is so big and so meaningful at this moment, that he's the item that pushes the leverage so far in favor of Liv that this deal cannot get done. And now
can't not get done.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So then PGA Tour has to throw up their hands and say, well, to preserve our existence, preserve us even existing 5 years from now, we have to do this deal. And that deal comes with a $1 billion equalization fund to $2 billion investments. Everybody's going to make out like a bandit on this whole thing if this deal gets done. And there's really nothing stopping. What's stopping Rory McIlroy and Victor Hovland and Tony Finau and Scottie Scheffler? And all, like, what is actually the resistance to them not going to live?
Well, this is conspiracy theory central right now. Like, this is not a real thing. But if I did it, shout out to OJ.
First cut shout out to OJ. He does the media rounds.
Yeah, he is, golf. Yeah, big time. Steep. It's pretty, I don't know, man. Like, it's pretty interesting. Rahm had a quote last night. I don't know if you guys watched the whole thing, but he had a quote where he said, I want to thank Patrick Cantlay, Rory, and Tiger Woods for their work. And something like, I hope they get what they're going for. I hope they get what they want. Mm-hmm. And I heard it and I was like, wait a second. Like, why is he talking about like, Why? That's weird that he would say that. To be clear, I don't believe any of this, but I also might believe some of it.
Yeah, I honestly, look, you say the term Trojan horse, my ears will perk up. That's just a fact. And I love the way you guys are attacking this. I think there could potentially be some legs to it. Or I think he just wanted $500 million.
I know. I feel part of this, and everybody has done this. Everybody that I've listened to or read has kind of gone a little bit out of their way to like make excuses for Rahm in a way that we didn't for DJ and Graham McDowell and all these guys, Brooks, Pat Perez, especially, because Rahm's awesome. Like, he is like the dude, and I don't know him well. I barely know him at all, but like, he's awesome to talk to. He's awesome with his time. Like, he's fantastic. And I think a lot of us are like bending over backwards to try to come up with reasons. You know what would end it though, Rick? You know what would end it all?
I'm ready.
Rory
going to live?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't, if Rahm was in deep, then Rory's like on the other side of the earth. Like, he's the whole, I just don't know if he could even do it at this point, but like, that would be the end of that would get the deal done.
So I want to mine into that because it kind of goes into something that I think about with Jay Monahan and how this whole thing has played out. We'll do that. We'll put a bow on this conversation. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. Okay, let me try to work through my thoughts here, KP, because so Rory McIlroy, who has been clearly the most vocal anti-LIV pro PGA Tour player, could he even at this point come out and say, whatever, I've lost, we've lost, I'm going to do it, I want to play where the world's best are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever that might be. And I think the answer is, could he physically make those words come out of his mouth? I don't know. It would be very, very painful. But it would be
crazy.
It would be memes for years. But I honestly think, and this to me, I'm getting ready. I'm not quite there. I'm not quite ready to shoot Jay Monahan into the sun yet. I'm going to give him 23 more days, right? But if we get to January 1st and there's no deal done, we can shoot him straight into the sun. Because this is his fault. I mean, I just look back at this. It was a failure to prepare. It was a failure to react. It was holding your players to a moral high ground. It was getting all of the help from your sponsors who would not sponsor anything with LIV. It was getting all the help from your networks, which would not even cover LIV. It is getting help from the OWGR, which would not give them points, yet you are still losing because you, behind the back of your players, gave up your moral high ground, said the thing that we've been talking about, the blood money, which you have to stay away from, is now okay, and we're going to get it. And that moment changed everything. In the dark of night, at the 11th hour, he goes on CNBC next to Yasser and says, "We're all boys here. I'm very excited about the future." And if I were Rory McIlroy, it's flipping the bird time, right? And it would be easy for him to throw Jay under the bus and say, "Listen, this is a players organization and they did this behind our back. Screw this guy." So I do think the one chance that Rory has to do that, as difficult as it would be, is to throw Jay under the bus.
I don't know. I don't think Rory has that in him. I don't.
What if he asked to save the PGA Tour?
He's the real Trojan horse. And Rory falls on his sword, not to save the PGA Tour, to save the world of golf.
Yeah, and yeah. Look, Rom kind of threw Jay under the bus by doing this in a way. Rory just has to be public and forthright about it.
Yeah, I don't know. My AirPods just died, so my sound's coming through my computer. I'm sorry if there's feedback, but what does that accomplish if he throws Jay Monahan under the bus? Like does that get the deal done quicker? Like what is?
No, but the thing that is stopping, I think where this started is Rory has been so anti-LIV, but things have changed with Jay Monahan essentially going behind these guys' back and changing the morality of things.
Well, but here's the problem the whole time, Rick, is they rolled the players out to do their dirty work the whole freaking time.
Yes, Jay Monahan should have been doing weekly press conferences. Instead, he made Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, John Rahm answer questions day in, day out, on the record, sound bites, be the mouthpiece, go through their talking points and then showed up on CNBC on a night.
Because I love how fired up Rick never gets this fired up. If an adult was like leading the charge and not rolling players out there and part of the problem with all this, Rick, is the structure of the organization. Member run. Well, who's in charge? Yeah, we're finding out that nobody knows, right? Like nobody knows who's in charge. Nobody is in charge. No adults. But if Jay or whoever hadn't been rolling Homa and Rory and JT and Spieth and writing talking points for Tiger out every week and had been front and center, then it doesn't feel like you're being betrayed. It feels like, well, it's still not great. It's not good vision, but at least you were the one that was out in front talking, taking the arrows, right, from everybody. And then you're like, well, we kind of got to this point. We got hung up. I actually don't blame Jay for keeping the deal like a secret. I blame him for everything that led up to that, to where he made everybody else the fall guy and not himself. That's the part that I think is a really bad look.
To be clear, Patrick, I mean, it's not a super enviable position. And I think this is why it being a player-run organization makes it very difficult, where, you know, golfer one has a lot of different incentives and goals than golfer 275 has. And the commissioner has to make all those people happy. But a player-run organization, it's so hard to do that, right? Is to make everybody happy. And we're finding out that a player-run organization has a lot of different players and a lot of different opinions and goals and things of that nature. So it's not enviable, but the way that this has been handled is just two thumbs down, big time F.
Which means if you're Yasser, why wouldn't you want Jay Monahan to be the guy you're negotiating with? Do you think there's a scenario where, you know, it's like, hey, we want to get rid of Jay. Yasser's like, if Jay goes, I walk away from the table. Like, I want to do this deal with Jay because he knows he can take advantage of him.
You're doing a deal. You want to do a deal with the guy that you perceive as the most incompetent.
Yeah, and then we can get him out once my money's tied in.
Yeah, here's the best case scenario for Yasser and maybe for golf is like, you get a deal done with Jay December 31st. And then Tiger Woods becomes the commissioner of the tour. Like, you know what I mean? Not that he would want it or anything like that, but I don't know how. I'm stunned that Jay Monahan is still involved. I'm stunned. I don't know how he survives if a deal gets done. I don't know how he survives if a deal doesn't get done, right? Like, I don't know the future for this guy. I don't think it's great.
It honestly reminds me a little bit. A couple years ago, the Steelers were switching general managers, and the old one, it was his last season, he's like, you know what? I want to do one more draft. And they let him. He wasn't going to be the general manager moving forward. He wasn't going to have the say on the future of the team. But they let him draft that year. And look at them now. They're losing to the 2-10 Patriots on Thursday Night Football. It really does remind me of that in a way where I think Jay's going to be, you know, very influential if a deal is struck. Very, you know, an architect, so to speak. A pioneer, even, to steal a word from Jon Rahm. And then he's going to be gone. I think that's how it unfolds.
I don't understand how. And I get that it's convoluted and complicated because the structure of the organization is very different than we think of a regular organization working. But the amount of reporting around like the seeming chaos behind the scenes on the PGA Tour side throughout the last 18 months is like, I don't know. It's kind of infuriating, you know? And I think that people, like for me, this has gone beyond like whether you're a fan of LIV or a fan of the PGA Tour, because I think fans of golf in general are just getting just vaporized by the situation. And if you're rooting for like Liv as an organization, congratulations, like very, very cool stuff. Like you essentially are rooting for golf to like shrink and not be like awesome, you know? And I think the same can be said. Like, I think one thing that's gotten lost in all this, Rick, is like, it became, if you spoke out against Liv, it's like, oh, well, you just love the PGA Tour. Like, you just love that organization. It's like, I don't care. Like, I don't care who is in charge of what. I don't love when a government, whether it's foreign or domestic, is running a sports league. I don't love that, right? You and I have talked about that. But I have no like affinity for the PGA Tour. If Mark Cuban starts a league and is like running this golf league and it's called the Dallas Golf League and everybody plays in it, great. Like whatever. I don't care. But like if you're rooting for either side now, then I think you're rooting for a diminished golf world, which would be super unfortunate for fans.
Yeah. It's very easy to take sides on everything these days, but having a split sport is an insane thing to root for. You know, imagine we talk about it all the time. If the NBA were to split and you're rooting for like, yeah, like let's send Giannis and LeBron and so-and-so and we'll never see them again. Or we'll see them four times. You're like, why would you ever want that? And yeah, whether it's this is going to be a case study of how to screw up a business. I think, I mean, it, you know, you're a nonprofit that didn't have any competition for 75 years. And on the first ounce of competition, like you buckle to the ground. I mean, it is like, it's shocking how far we've come. I'm stunned.
Yeah.
It's just disappointing, really.
I think I don't know how this is going to go. And I think I'm with you, Rick. If we get to December 31st and they're like, well, we haven't figured this out, or we're partnering with these private equity groups and the PIF is out, I would not feel great about the future of professional golf, genuinely.
Right.
And like, the next 3 weeks are going to be fascinating, which I'm like, can I just read a book in December? Like, that's what December's for golf people. And the next 3 weeks, you might have 15 guys say like, well, I've got 3 weeks to get my 30 million. I'm out. Right?
Right. I mean, if you are a, you know, golfer 20 on the PGA Tour, 25, whatever, and you've got a $30 or $40 million offer, and this clock is ticking. What? There is also a chance John Rahm just got 300, 400, 500, who knows how much. A deal gets cut. He goes on existing in essentially the same life that he lives with another $500 million, right? Like what? How does that work?
Well, but I think
it's probably like over years, you know, it's probably like 50 million if a deal gets struck or something, and it's a year later, like 70 million. He's not getting all of that up front. And, right. You know, some is tied to Dirty Grooves, GC as well, a potential name I've heard for his squad.
Dirty Grooves?
Liv's trademark requested Dirty Grooves and Hybrids GC.
Just insane stuff. I was going to say something. I think the $1 billion in like pay, like giving to guys is still a thing. Like, I don't think just because Rahm got all this money that it means that other guys might not. I just think like why is Patrick Cantlay leading the charge on the PGA Tour side? You've got Ed Herlihy, who leads like one of the biggest law firms on earth, and is like adept at all this stuff, and freaking Patrick Cantlay is trying to, I mean, what are we doing? Like what is happening? It's outrageous.
We're going to change the name of this podcast to What Are We Doing? Because it is seriously insane to think about. And we have no idea. Here, last final thought here, $1 billion split by 200 golfers is $5 million a piece. $5 million for your loyalty, 200 golfers, maybe worth it. All right. There's obviously plenty more to come. December will not be quiet. December will not be fun. December will not allow you to read books, clear your calendars, cancel Christmas. December is golf drama time, and we'll cover it as we go. Big thanks to producer Josh, who does all the hard work behind the scenes. Patrick McDonald, available on Twitter at amateur status. Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.